WINF in Tampa, Florida. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
On this edition of the KPFK Evening News for Friday, May 3rd.
I don't want to pay taxes to prevent pipelines from being blown up.
Where is the quality care? Where is the compassion? And where is the respect?
And a report on covert military operations in South America. We'll have those stories and more, but first, these headlines. President Bush is ordering a restoration of normal trade relations with Afghanistan. U.S.-Afghani trade has been suspended since 1986. Bush said the order could contribute to economic growth and assist Afghanistan in rebuilding their economy. The order takes effect 30 days after it's published in the Federal Register. The group Human Rights Watch issued a report after a week-long investigation in the Jenin refugee camp. The Human Rights Watch team said evidence suggests that the Israel Defense Forces committed war crimes in Jenin. However, they also said that they did not find evidence to support claims that a massacre occurred in the camp. Microsoft company officials said they will likely pull Chief Executive Steve Ballmer from the list of defense witnesses scheduled to testify in its antitrust case. The decision comes less than 2 weeks after Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates took the stand to oppose sanctions from 9 states. The holdout states, including California, refused to sign on to a settlement of the case reached between Microsoft and the U.S. Justice Department in November. Hewlett-Packard officially closed a $19 billion acquisition of Compaq Computer Company. The companies will begin business together on Tuesday. Authorities say pipe bombs have injured 5 people in rural Illinois and Iowa, and they are cases of domestic terrorism. 8 devices have been found and 5 went off. They were accompanied by anti-government notes. Mail deliveries have been suspended in some areas. A group trying to bring a pro football team back to Los Angeles has identified a lot next to Staples Center as a potential site for a new stadium. Tim Leitwicki, president of the Anschutz Entertainment Group, told the Los Angeles Area Chamber of Commerce that in the best-case scenario, a team could be ready to play in L.A. as soon as 2003. And finally, California's largest petroleum provider, BP, says it will phase out the gasoline additive, MTBE, by December. The phase-out comes a year ahead of a state deadline. Although MTBE helps cut air pollution, it contaminates water supplies and may cause cancer. 3 years ago, Governor Davis ordered MTBE banned by the end of this year, but he pushed back the deadline in March. You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. The nation's jobless rate shot up 6% last month. This is the highest point in nearly 8 years, despite companies having added 43,000 jobs during the month. The U.S. unemployment rate shot up to its highest level in more than 7.5 years in April. The Labor Department says this is the latest sign that the Federal Reserve should be in no rush to start raising interest rates. According to government statistics, 43,000 jobs were created in April, but that followed a loss of 21,000 jobs in March. Wall Street economists had forecasted 41,000 jobs would be created in April and that the unemployment rate would edge up to 5.8%, but revised government figures show jobs were lost in each of the first 3 months of this year. That's 109,000 in January, 4,000 in February, and 21,000 in March. The Fed is scheduled to meet to consider its interest rate strategy next Tuesday. President Bush is optimistic that the United States and Russia can reach a major nuclear arms reduction agreement. Today, President Bush met with Russian Foreign Minister Igor Ivanov and Secretary of State Colin Powell. Bush is hopeful he can sign arms reduction agreements with President Vladimir Putin at a Moscow summit in 3 weeks. Earlier, Ivanov and Powell met separately, and the Secretary of State felt encouraged by the progress made in detailed discussions. However, Powell asserted in a joint news conference that a formal agreement has yet to be reached.
We have made progress toward the completion of our work on a strategic framework document. There are still some outstanding issues, but I think I can say that we're both encouraged by the progress that we made today.
While Foreign Minister Ivanov also expressed optimism that a deal will be reached, the key sticking point, according to a senior U.S. official, is whether the discarded warheads are to be stored or disposed of. Both countries have some 6,000 warheads each. Iraq and the United Nations are moving a bit closer toward ending their disputes. However, Baghdad gave no definitive reply on whether it would allow UN arms inspectors back into the country to search for weapons of mass destruction. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan called his talks with Iraqi Foreign Minister Naji Sabri positive. Annan also said he hoped Baghdad would make a decision on the inspectors at the next round of meetings. Foreign Minister Sabri confirmed that another round of talks was on the horizon.
The debate was useful, frank, and focused. The Iraqi delegation included several highly qualified technical people, and they went through a lot of discussions with the UN delegation, technical people.
Annan felt the talks were especially significant because Iraq, for the first time, focused on weapons questions, bringing along several top-level disarmament experts in its 16-member delegation. Foreign Minister Sabri also added that substantive progress had been made.
We continued our debate in the same spirit of cooperation, the same positive spirit which characterized our meeting last time in March. And hopefully we shall continue this in the next round, which will be, we shall work out, agree on a date.
UN inspections of Iraqi weapons facilities were agreed to at the end of the Gulf War in 1991. UN inspectors have not been in Iraq since December of 1998. President Bush is rejecting proposals by Democrats to add billions of extra dollars for child care to Bush's welfare reform plan. The Bush administration says it believes there's enough money for child care in current welfare programs. Congress must review the welfare reform bill passed under the Clinton administration of this year. Child care is emerging as one of the most contentious issues. President Bush has called for welfare recipients to increase their work week from 30 to 40 hours, but he has not included any more daycare funds in his welfare budget. Democrats say that Bush's plan to require more welfare recipients to get jobs and work more hours per week would be a recipe for disaster unless money for more child care is included. Around 30 nurses and community leaders are calling on Queen of Angels Medical Center to improve nurse-to-patient ratios and increase worker benefits. The group rallied outside the medical center in Hollywood today, giving speeches and marching inside to hospital CEO Al Green's office. Angela Cunningham, a registered nurse in the Queen of Angels ICU, is part of the Service Employees International Union Local 399. She accuses Queen of Angels parent company Tenet Healthcare Corporation of hypocrisy in its public statements.
Tenet's mission statement is quality care with compassion and respect. Well, where is the quality care? Where is the compassion and where is the respect? So Tenet, stop paying lip service and stop telling lies.
Tenet is a for-profit hospital chain with profits of $1.5 billion in 2001. Based in Santa Barbara, it has 116 hospitals in 17 states, including 19 in Los Angeles. Tenet receives millions of dollars in state funds to subsidize its hospitals in low-income communities. It received $63 million in state funds for Queen of Angels in 1999. Louisa Blue is president of the Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance. She says Tenet prefers to expand its territory and spend its revenue cosmetically instead of providing an adequate wage and working conditions for its nurses.
New tiles for the floors, new paint for the buildings, that's what they spend their money on, and acquisitions, right? They're going around buying up as many hospitals as they can, especially the hospitals that have been community-based for a long time, and you know, they're losing money, right, as healthcare costs rise. They basically take those hospitals over.
Nurses at Queen of Angels complain that understaffing often forces them to deal with excessively large workloads. Tessie Fahilan is a registered nurse with Local 399. She says Queen of Angels doesn't anticipate when demand for services will be greatest, and that adds to the stress of the job.
Then when the admissions come, you're really very short. No secretary, no anybody to draw blood. You do your own whole thing. You do the secretarial job. You gather the trays and feed the patient. So we're really understaffed.
Other nurses describe unsafe working conditions that result from a lack of staffing, such as having to take blood from 45 patients in 2 hours. Queen of Angels officials declined to comment on today's actions. The labor headlines are coming up from the National News Service of the Workers. You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Carpenters are on the picket lines at construction sites across Connecticut today. On Wednesday, about 3,000 walked off the job after their old contract expired April 30th. Bert Durand of the New England Regional Council of Carpenters.
There's a certain amount of money that needs to be added to the wage and benefit package just to keep things like health benefits at their current level.
The carpenters want to elect their own union stewards on job sites. They've also rejected demands for pre-hire physicals and random drug testing.
If we're truly coming out of a recession, why are more and more people losing their jobs? The Labor Department says 418,000 people applied for unemployment assistance last week, and companies announced more than 112,000 job cuts last month. For the year, layoff announcements are running comparable to last year's record-setting pace.
Laundry workers in the Southwest have an opportunity to gain union representation. From Albuquerque, Joe Garner-Wesley reports.
This week and next week, several hundred laundry workers at Mission Linen Supply will be voting on whether they want to affiliate with the Union of Needle Trades, Industrial and Textile Employees, or UNITE. About 400 laundry workers will vote in California, Arizona, and New Mexico. UNITE organizers say Mission Linen workers face low wages and abuse from non-Spanish-speaking supervisors. Joanne Gutierrez is an organizer with UNITE in Albuquerque.
The average wage here is $6.50, and that's anybody has 1 week that's been working here to 30 years. They really get no wage increases. Their benefits are awful. You know, they just offered a 401k, but they have no pension plan. They have no security of a job.
Gutierrez says the coming votes and contracts Mission has already approved will affect about 2,000 workers at the large industrial launderer. For Workers Independent News Service, I'm Joe Gardner-Wesley in Albuquerque.
A federal district court in New York has ruled that United Parcel Service underpaid into its employees' health and retirement benefits funds to the tune of more than $3 million. It turns out UPS wasn't making any payments for overtime work, nor was it paying for any of the time its workers spent in training programs. The underpayments have been going on for more than a decade.
From United for a Fair Economy, here's today's Dal Bob Report. The excesses of the 1990s economic boom and not the events of September 11th have caused insurance rates to skyrocket for small businesses. Insurance premium rates have been steadily rising since June of 2001. Businesses are now confronting insurance rates that are twice as high as last year, and economists worry that the high rates will hinder the ability of small businesses to create new jobs.
That was John Hamilton and John Anderson from the Workers' International News Service. DNA tests on bodies of 5 women found in northern Mexico last year have failed to establish their identities beyond doubt. 8 women were found raped and strangled in November in an overgrown cotton field in Ciudad Juarez, Chihuahua. Relatives identified 3 of them, but the other corpses were too badly decomposed. Federal officials had asked the state of Chihuahua to resubmit DNA samples for further analysis. The shareholders of Occidental Petroleum met in Century City, but not without hearing from shareholder activists who hold Occidental partly accountable for the escalating conflict in Colombia. They opposed the Bush administration's plan to defend Occidental's oil pipeline in the country with $98 million in military aid to Colombia's government. And they say that Occidental is using all the players in the Colombian conflict to its advantage, giving money to both the Colombian government and to the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, who oppose it. Kevin Koenig of the environmental group Amazon Watch.
Occidental, by paying all sides of the armed actors in Colombia, they are fueling a cycle of violence around their oil operations.
On May 1st, Attorney General John Ashcroft indicted the FARC for the murder of three U.S. human rights workers in 1999. Ashcroft said the indictments should serve to prove, in his words, the Bush administration's determination to hunt down terrorists worldwide. One of the three killed was Terence Freitas. His mother, Julie, was among the activists at the shareholders meeting. While Freitas says she's grateful that the U.S. government is still making an effort to bring her son's killers to justice, she also says she's doubtful the Colombian government would hand the killers over, even if they were apprehended. Freitas wasn't involved in the protests against Occidental before her son was killed, but now she says she feels obligated to speak in his place. Freitas says she opposes Occidental's involvement in Colombia and doesn't want the U.S. to subsidize it.
President Pastrana wants the United States to help protect the pipelines, and that should be the responsibility of the oil company. It shouldn't be the responsibility of U.S. taxpayers. I don't want to pay taxes to prevent pipelines from being blown up.
Bernard Strauss has been an Occidental shareholder for 25 years. He says he's been hearing criticisms of Occidental's policies in Colombia at board meetings for a while now. He thinks it's bad for the company.
I would move out of it to avoid these bad comments and impressions that people get about the company. I think it's bad for the company, and I would vote for them to abandon Colombia.
But he sees little possibility of that happening.
The board, or the president, or the chairman, whatever they call them, controls this thing with an iron fist. And they have the volume of votes so that you really have no say as a small stockholder. You'd have your vote, but it would be voted down very quickly. It's the intent of the leadership to continue this thing, but I would vote against.
Representatives from Occidental Petroleum were unavailable to comment for this report. Plan Condor is back, they say. The reactivation of Operation Condor is raising concerns in the Americas. The name harkens back to the coordinated operations in the 70s and 80s by members of Latin American police and military officers to repress and, some say, torture political dissidents. In the midst of the Bush administration's war on terrorism, human rights activists, investigators, researchers, and dissidents are warning the public about another wave of kidnappings and killings. But not everyone believes in the resurgence of Operation Condor. Hugo Saenz is an associate researcher with the Center for Defense Information in Washington, D.C.
The only information that I know is that the U.S. is providing military assistance to the Colombian government for Plan Colombia in order to fight counter narcotics. And the other type of military exercise that I know are UNITAS, which is a joint exercise between the U.S. and several Latin American armies who belong to the Rio Treaty.
In his last visit to Los Angeles, former Nobel Prize winner Adolfo Pérez Esquivel warned Angelenos about the planned resurrection of Plan Condor. But science says there is no reason for concern.
You have to make a very clear distinction in that statement, because Plan Condor was a military secret operation and was organized and orchestrated by the members of the South American military dictatorship back there in the 1970s and 1980s. Plan Colombia is a total different thing. It's a major counter-narcotic strategy that was designed by the Colombian government and the American government to fight the legal traffic of drugs in Colombia.
For journalist Hugo Guzman, this resurgence is no longer a question of speculation. Guzman says there's evidence to suggest that former Latin American police and military groups are already engaging in actions that resemble Operation Condor.
Bueno, mira, hay dos planos. El primero es que extraoficialmente hay conocimiento de que antiguos oficiales e integrantes de los cuerpos
We know about the activities of former police and military groups who have developed plans to fight social and political groups, particularly from the left. Also, there have been some gatherings of security agencies that give us reasons for concern. One of them is the Conference of Latin American Armies that include the brass of the U.S. and Latin America. The other one is the meeting of intelligence chiefs in which they approved a document called Coordinated Appreciation of Subversives in the Continent, in which they describe rebel, social, and political organizations opposing the governments, who would be monitored and, in some cases, repressed by the armies.
Guzman says during the Cold War, U.S. support for military dictatorships and the overthrow of governments in Latin America was justified by a war against communism. You are listening to KPFK 90.7 FM. President Bush says Senate Democrats who have refused to confirm his nominees for federal judgeships are creating a backlog of unfilled posts and unheard cases. Democrats are responding that Republicans created the backlog by stalling former President Clinton's judicial nominees and that they are moving faster. In a speech, Bush said of 100 federal court nominees he has sent to Capitol Hill in the past year, only half have been confirmed. Only 9 of his 30 nominees to federal circuit appeals courts have been confirmed. More than 800 radioactive sources have been lost or stolen in the United States in the last 5 years, according to a letter released by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The radioactive materials are used for medical treatment, research, and food irradiation. They are also potential ingredients for what the NRC calls dirty bombs. The commission says it has no reason to believe the material had been stolen for the purpose of making radioactive bombs, but critics say the missing material underscores U.S. nuclear security failings. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission licenses about 2 million radioactive sources for medical research and industrial uses. In the last 5 years, more than half of the stolen or abandoned sources were not recovered. According to an NRC spokesman, a bomb made with these materials would, in his words, probably not cause a large number of deaths. However, they could spread low-level contamination over an area up to several city blocks. Some of the isotopes that are missing in amounts that exceed levels considered to be highly hazardous. A growing fair trade movement is challenging the rules of the global economy, bypassing middlemen and large-scale production by trading directly with large-scale farmers and producers. A recent fair trade fair in Madison, Wisconsin, highlights the diversity of goods traded under new rules. John Hamilton has this report.
At the Fair Trade Fair in Madison on Saturday, merchants and small farmers display their wares as customers browse through women's saris imported from India, drums from Africa, and fair trade Bolivian coffee. At one table, Barb Alvarado is showing customers an array of drums, musical instruments, and little wooden carved statues.
We have some pottery from India. We have Brazil nuts from Peru. We have baskets. We have children's games. We have books.
Alvarado is with the group Serve, a nonprofit fair trade organization that works to help people in poorer countries market their handcrafts. Serve has stores throughout the U.S. and recently opened one in Madison. The company purchases directly from small farmers and artisans, and Alvarado says they always pay a fair price to the producers.
All the goods we consume can be either made under good conditions or bad conditions, from, you know, clothing to musical instruments to, you know, food products, everything.
Among the hottest selling items at Serve's display are little packages of foil-wrapped chocolates. Fair trade chocolates like these have seen an explosion of popularity in the past year, following reports from Anti-Slavery International that much of the cocoa harvested in West Africa is done so by children forced into slavery. These chocolates are made in Germany from cocoa produced in Ghana. They're marketed as equal exchange chocolate under the brand name Divine.
The good thing about our Divine chocolate is the cocoa is harvested by different families in Ghana who are part of a cooperative in Ghana. And the people in Ghana own a third of that company. So they really have a say in, you know, what's going to happen to the chocolate and, you know, how it's going to be sold and what they're going to get out of that.
At a nearby stand, John Kinsman is showing off his Wisconsin cheeses, Colby, cheddar, and tomato basil, all produced without the use of hormones on a small farm outside the city. As a family farmer, Kinsman is part of a dying breed. He says that family farms are unable to compete with large-scale agriculture, the so-called factory farms.
Because they get subsidies, the majority of subsidies, we call it welfare. The state of Wisconsin, for example, gives hundreds of thousands of dollars to corporate factory farms to move into the state, dairy farms. Well, we get nothing.
If there's any hope for small farmers, Kinsman says, it's in specialized markets like fair trade shops and in the growing organic food business. Not only are organics free from pesticides and genetically modified ingredients, he says, but the foods are of a higher quality. Quality is the issue that keeps fair trade coffee buyers coming back for more, despite the higher price of beans. According to Josh Geidel of the Fair Trade Coffee Group Equal Exchange, which pays producers as much as four times the market price for its coffee, Fair Trade Java can compete with other brands.
We do quite a bit, especially here in Madison. We have a presence in almost all the major grocery stores here.
Mario Monroy is with Comercio Justo, a fair trade group in Mexico that began 3 years ago as a strategic alliance between small farmers and other civic groups. Monroy says the primary market for his Comercio Justo goods is Mexico, although he hopes to see sales expand in the U.S. and Europe.
El objetivo es que una parte de la sociedad mexicana nos demos la oportunidad de...
The idea is that we, as Mexicans, are able to certify our own products, such things as coffee and other food products. Fundamentally, this guarantees the Mexican consumer that these products have social responsibility and ecological responsibility behind them.
A major initiative of Comercio Justo is a drive to support small-scale agriculture in Mexico. For centuries, Mexican farmers have grown maize and beans. Now, as genetically engineered crops flood the Mexican market under the North American Free Trade Agreement, many have been forced off their land. According to Monroy, fair trade is the only option for farmers who wish to compete with mechanized and subsidized U.S. farms.
And so it's by going back to these crops and by being able to produce them on a national and a regional level that we'll be able to have our food sovereignty. We're talking about 6 million people, 6 million families. And if they don't have the opportunity to cultivate their own land and to have foodstuffs for their own use, they'll continue to emigrate to the United States.
Monroy says that his wealth continues to polarize under the current economic system with its free trade agreements like NAFTA, CAFTA, and Plan Puebla Panama, workers and consumers will have to find more ways to connect in order to create an alternative fair trade economy. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm John Hamilton.
And that's it for this edition of the KPFK Evening News. If you have tips, comments, or suggestions, please contact the news department by email at news@kpfk.org. We had help tonight from Justin Stinchcomb, Fernando Velasquez, Alan Minsky, Eben Ray, Patrick Burke, and engineer Maggie LaPique. I'm Monica Lopez. Thanks for listening.
On Latino USA, Latino gangs in Los Angeles are on the rise again, but this generation has found new ways to bring fear to the streets. That's today on Latino USA, the radio journal of news and culture.
Join us for Latino USA tonight at 7:30 on 90.7 FM, KPFK.
what really happened in Jenin? Israeli defense forces claimed that about 200 people were killed, but later retracted their statement. Palestinians have found 58 bodies, which so far matches the Israeli figure. Since the UN's fact-finding mission has been derailed, does Israel have anything to hide? I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. Tune in to the morning show on Monday, the 6th of May at 7 a.m., where representatives of Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International shed light on Jenin. Also, Adam Shapiro in studio. LA Times' Paul Watson reporting live from the Pakistan-Afghanistan frontier. California's love affair with SUVs. And Enron employee turns activist. Can you believe all the things we have in store for you? At the morning show, Monday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on 90.5.